when they answered Rehoboam's insistence that he would do as he liked as king, their welfare be damned. They sang, "What portion have we in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel, look now to your own house, David."
The Bible is full of stories that we all know and love. But how well do we know them? The answer might surprise you. The Bible you thought you knew is going to dive deep into the exquisite details of the biblical stories that make them fascinating and transforming.
In last week's podcast, we dealt with Rehoboam and Jeroboam, who both played strategic roles in Israel's infamous split that eventuated in a northern kingdom called Israel and a southern kingdom called Judah. This podcast treats the aftermath of Rehoboam's rejecting the recommendation of his elder advisors, who advocated that he implement more generous policies, and his subsequently accepting the recommendation of his younger advisors, pejoratively referred to as children, who urged him to inform the people that he would considerably outdo his father Solomon when it came to sticking it to ordinary citizens. Predictably, a response that provocative would not result in the people going home with tails between their legs. But before we treat this part of the story in detail, I want to tell you a little something about these podcasts and how I have been recording them. The place where I record my podcasts is called The Hive. This is a sound studio located in Boise, Idaho, where local musicians rehearse, record, and congregate. However, this studio also has a mission, namely to reduce suicide in the music community. Hence, The Hive raises funds so that musicians will have access to appropriate counseling and mental health practitioners. If you are interested in donating to The Hive, I recommend that you go to their website, boisehive.org. Now, the person I work with at The Hive is Brenda Francis, an incredibly competent person whose talents include being a superb sound technician. She sets up the studio in a most accommodating way, uses her vast computer skills to keep track of the podcasts, downloads the material onto a flash drive, is infinitely patient with my mistakes, and ever so gently prods me into having at least two podcasts ready to go for a recording session. Just for the record, Brenda does all this as a volunteer. I swear that having Brenda to work with is perhaps one of the reasons the area around Boise is referred to as the Treasure Valley. Besides my wanting to thank The Hive and Brenda Francis, there is one more reason for telling you this. Typically, I record two versions of each podcast, thus providing enough copy for my production company, Legacy, to edit the material so that it ends up being a quality production. Starting this week, however, I'm going to be content with a single recording for each podcast. This might mean that in the future you notice a glitch or so in the podcast. Aside from normal errors to which anyone is susceptible, I also suffer from a condition called aphasia. This is because in December of 2014, I had a massive stroke that left me paralyzed on my right side and no speech. Fortunately, my wife was with me at the time and was able to get me to the hospital in less than an hour. The drug that is called TPA, as miraculous as it is dangerous, dissolved the clot in my brain within 24 hours. My paralysis disappeared. I did not have to do any physical therapy as a result of the stroke. Speech was another matter. After 10 weeks of speech therapy, I recovered my voice. Aphasia is incurable, but thankfully, most people do not notice much deficit. I certainly do. So when you hear me stumble a little, or mispronounce a word, or utter an infelicitous expression, I happily blame that on aphasia. Now, back to the podcast at hand. Just as the children advised him, Rehoboam spoke harshly to Jeroboam and his Israelite deputation when they returned after 3 days. You can look at that in verse 12 of chapter 12 of 1 Kings. Indeed, Rehoboam followed this foolish advice to a T, making no effort whatsoever to soften its impact or couch it in more palatable language. Rehoboam quoted these advisors verbatim when he arrogantly let the Israelites know, quote, "My father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will do so with scorpions." That's in verse 14 of chapter 12. A yoke is, of course, something that is put on an ox or other beast of burden to restrict it, keep it under control, and get it to do whatever work one wants it to do. In short, the yoke is a symbol of slavery. Using scorpions instead of whips is Rehoboam's way of saying that he will tolerate no resistance or even reluctance to do precisely what the king demands. This is a grim situation. Before the story proceeds, however, we get a little theological explanation from the narrator. This circumstance obtains, we are informed, because 1. Rehoboam did not listen to the people and ameliorate their condition by relaxing royal policies that they perceived as harsh, and 2. This was a turn of affairs which the Lord had been behind. That's in verse 15. The Lord had seen to it that Ahijah's prophecy would be fulfilled. Remember that Ahijah had appeared to Jeroboam to let him know that a divided Israel was a done deal. That's in verses 30 to 39 in chapter 11 of 1 Kings. And that he, Jeroboam, would be the first king of Israel, the newly formed northern part of the Israelite kingdom. A divided Israelite kingdom came about then because of disastrous choices which Solomon and Rehoboam had made, and because of God's deciding on division as a fitting punishment for Israelite sin. Just like clockwork, the people responded to Rehoboam's in-your-face arrogance just as one would have expected. They rebelled. They even composed a protest song when they answered Rehoboam's insistence that he would do as he liked as king, their welfare be damned. They sang, "What portion have we in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel! Look now to your own house, David." That's in verse 16 of chapter 12. So, the Israelite deputation went home, prepared to establish a separate socio-political entity, which henceforth would be called Israel. Rehoboam will rule over a truncated Israel. His first attempt to reverse what had happened was as colossally stupid as his doubling down on his father's oppressive policies. He sent Adoram, a man in charge of forced labor in Israel, to see whether he could do anything about the pending schism. Adoram was promptly and unceremoniously stoned, something that had nothing to do with drugs. That display of violence prompted Rehoboam to hightail it to Jerusalem in his chariot. That's in verse 18 of chapter 12. The narration ensures that we see the gravity of what had just taken place. Israel was in a state of rebellion against the house of David from that time forward. That's in verse 1 of chapter 12. Jeroboam, once in the employ of Solomon, now became the northern kingdom's first king. However, notwithstanding Adoram's being dispatched so gruesomely, Rehoboam has another card up his sleeve. He musters 180,000 troops to quell the rebellion so that he can rule over all the territory of Israel, just as his father Solomon and grandfather David had done. But before that campaign got off the ground, another prophet made an appearance. The prophet here, called a man of God, was Shemaiah. That's in verse 22. The Lord instructed him to tell Rehoboam to scrap his plans to force the rest of Israel into submission. That's in verses 23 and 24 of chapter 12. As well, Shemaiah was to remind Rehoboam that the schism was ultimately God's doing. Once the prophet explained the situation to Rehoboam in no uncertain terms, the king desisted. War was averted. Israel would remain divided. From now on, the biblical story will feature Judah, the southern kingdom, and Israel, the northern kingdom. In the northern kingdom, the new king, Jeroboam, immediately built two cities, Shechem and Peniel. That's verse 25 of chapter 12. The former was the king's residence. After these capital projects, we are given an insight into Jeroboam's strategy for making certain that his new kingdom remained intact. Jeroboam worried that Israelites from the north would return to the temple in Jerusalem to offer sacrifices. Would that induce them to reconsider their political stance? Might they confuse their commitment to the Israelite deity with their commitment to Rehoboam, who was, after all, still part of the esteemed Davidic dynasty? Not only was there the potential for Israelites to redirect their loyalty, that change might eventuate in Jeroboam's assassination as well. Jeroboam thought he had a way of preventing this unhappy result. Upon consulting with advisors, Jeroboam saw to it that two cities would become religious centers. One would be in the southern part of his territory, and the other in the northern part, specifically Bethel in the south and Dan in the north. Then he constructed two golden calves and said the following to his people, quote, "You have gone up to Jerusalem long enough. Behold your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt." End of quote. That's in verse 28 of chapter 12. Whether we translate "behold your gods" or "behold your God," for either is possible, clearly the golden calves represent Israel's God, as the phrase "who brought you up out of the land of Egypt" indicates. Of course, it is not lost on us that this is exactly how Aaron, Moses' brother, introduced the infamous golden calf in the episode recounted in Exodus chapter 32. Israel has not forgotten their idolatrous ways. The narrator affirms that this was no innocent undertaking. This thing, that is, the erecting of the calves and then regarding them as objects of worship, was seen as sin for Israel. There was no sugarcoating this behavior. In fact, the rest of the chapter details what else Jeroboam did to install other religious practices at odds with Orthodox Israelite tradition. Ironically, God punished Israel with a schism because of Solomon's idolatrous practices. When Jeroboam was named as the new king for the northern kingdom, he was admonished to obey God according to the original covenant arrangements. That's in verses 38 and 39 of chapter 11. But as soon as he assumed power, he installed all manner of non-Israelite worship patterns. He built houses on high places. That's in verse 31 of chapter 12. Recall that high places is technical language for improper worship. Jeroboam also appointed non-Levitical priests, which also was a violation of the covenant. That's in verse 31 of chapter 12. Equally, he established a feast day in imitation of one that was held in Judah. On that day, the king offered sacrifices to the golden calves. That's in verse 32 of chapter 12. In short, Jeroboam managed to make the northern kingdom Israel indistinguishable from the southern kingdom Judah in terms of non-Israelite worship. From a moral and religious perspective, there was not a dime's worth of difference between the newly formed Judah and Israel. That did not bode well for their future. God was watching. The kingship is on a downward spiral toward destruction. Schism was simply the first step.
I want to thank you so very much for listening to The Bible You Thought You Knew. I have a question for you. Do you have a question or topic that you'd like me to cover on the podcast? If so, all you need to do is head over to Apple Podcasts and do two simple things. One, leave a rating and review telling me what you think of the podcast. Two, in that review, ask anything you want related to the Bible. That's all you have to do. Then, listen in to hear your question answered on a future episode. Join us next time on The Bible You Thought You Knew when we discuss Jesus' personal Bible. God bless.